Good morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Philippine President Corazon Aquino has survived 6 coup attempts and countless coup rumors in her 4 years in office. This morning, she's faced with a new military rebellion, which her loyal military chief of staff vows to put down.
We cannot allow this to happen. We will not allow this to happen. We will take whatever is necessary to prevent this from happening.
Renegade soldiers led by a former colonel in Mrs. Aquino's own palace guard have seized 2 cities on the island of Mindanao without firing a shot. But they reportedly lost a third city when government planes firing rockets kept them from taking over a military camp. Aquino appealed for a renewal of the people power that swept her into office in 1986.
I am calling once again on the people to rally against these troublemakers. This morning, I met with the leadership of both houses of Congress, and I called upon them to help me in rallying our people.
The U.S. Ambassador Nicholas Platt condemned the revolt and expressed full support for Aquino. In Washington, congressional leaders said U.S. aid would be cut off if the rebels ousted Aquino.
Begin die parlamentarische Arbeit im Vereinten Deutschland.
Chancellor Helmut Kohl, in his first policy address as head of a united Germany, said the nation's main challenge now is to erase the scars of 45 years of division. He spoke in Berlin's Reichstag today before a freely elected all-German parliament. Tom Fenton reports.
It was another historic moment for Berlin, the first parliament of a united Germany since Hitler put an end to democracy in the early 1930s. The new German parliament includes East Germans who represent not only the traditional left and right, but also extreme right-wingers and former communists. There are many small parties, and Helmut Kohl, now Chancellor of all Germany, may have some headaches dealing with them. This first session in the old Berlin Reichstag building is largely symbolic, dealing with the all-German elections scheduled for December and the end of the occupation rights over Berlin exercised by the Allied powers since 1945. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Berlin.
In New York, the U.S. and Soviet Union have all but completed the most comprehensive conventional arms reduction treaty for Europe since World War II. Bill Plant has that.
Announcement of the agreement came after 5 hours of negotiation between Secretary of State Baker and Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze. They must now submit it to all their respective allies in the NATO and Warsaw Pact treaty organizations.
But so far as U.S.-Soviet discussions, we have been able to reach mutual understanding on all the major issues.
The treaty drastically limits the number of tanks, planes, and artillery pieces in both treaty groups. Aircraft were the main stumbling block, and in fact, although numbers weren't announced, it was said that there was still one sticking point on helicopters.
And of course, the Soviet Union made all the main concessions.
You don't want me to disagree with that, do you, Minister?
Baker is expected to meet with Shevardnadze one more time before the Soviet foreign minister returns to Moscow, probably in New York on Friday. But yesterday's progress assures that there will be a treaty signing next month in Paris. Bill Plant, CBS News, New York.
There's plenty of Persian Gulf diplomacy today. French President Mitterrand is in Saudi Arabia seeing his troops and King Fahd. Japan's Prime Minister Kaifu is meeting Iraq's Deputy Premier in Amman. And a key Kremlin aide has arrived in Baghdad for talks with Iraq's Foreign Minister Aziz and perhaps Saddam Hussein as well. In Moscow, President Gorbachev said he thinks there will be no war and that he still has no intention to send troops. It's been nearly 2 months since Saudi Arabia asked the U.S. to send troops, and New York Congressman Stephen Solars says he's learned from Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador in Washington, that that decision followed 3 brief Iraqi probes into Saudi territory and Iraqi duplicity on its hotline to Riyadh.
There was a third incursion by Iraqi forces across the border, and it wasn't possible for the Saudis to get any Iraqi on the hotline, and it was at that point that the Saudis concluded that it would be the better part of wisdom to invite American and other foreign forces into that country in order to create a credible deterrent against what they feared might otherwise be an imminent Iraqi invasion of their country.
Iraq's embassy in London today issued a strong denial of allegations from Amnesty International that Saddam Hussein's troops in Kuwait are systematically torturing and killing civilians as they loot and colonize that tiny city-state. Australia's Sydney Morning Herald reports today that Iraq's secret police has turned Baghdad's former Kuwait city embassy and an apartment complex there into interrogation and torture chambers, one of which has sent 230 mutilated bodies to a single hospital. The paper also quotes a diplomat as saying Iraqi troops paraded 5 bleeding torture victims in front of a group of ambassadors on August 16th, apparently to scare them into leaving Kuwait. As Congress heads for a critical test today of the $500 billion deficit-cutting package, members are torn between appeals from President Bush to save the economy and the howls of constituent complaint pouring through their mail slot and telephone lines. Take these San Francisco voters.
It's a shame that they couldn't come up with something a little better. It seems like the bulk of the damage is done to the middle class, which is me.
It's going to kill the middle class, those of us who make a total income of $30,000 to $80,000, and I'm absolutely against that.
And as Rob Armstrong reports, with Election Day looming, the politicians are listening.
The budget deal is in trouble, with conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats in open revolt and about a dozen other Democrats, led by Wisconsin's David Obie, threatening to vote no unless they're allowed to offer an amendment.
It would produce an impact on the middle class far more fair than the White House-driven decisions which are in the existing budget summit.
Despite the personal lobbying efforts of the president, despite the promises of Democratic and Republican leaders to deliver a majority on both sides of the aisle, the showdown vote approaches with the outcome very much in doubt. Rob Armstrong, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
This is Deborah Potter at the White House. President Bush had planned to leave town this morning on a two-day campaign swing, but he's staying home to keep up the fight for the budget plan. Officials here say they still believe they can win, but it's going to be very close, especially in the House. Mr. Bush has been lobbying for the deal all week, calling more Republicans to the White House yesterday and spending hours on the phone, trying to persuade them to support the plan. His key argument, that without a budget agreement, the country will tumble into recession. But it's a hard sell. One Republican emerged from an arm-twisting session with Mr. Bush saying he had changed his mind from firmly opposed to firmly undecided. Deborah Potter, CBS News, the White House.
Also today, the House must choose between two plans for speedier executions for such crimes as assassination of federal officials, treason, or espionage, part of an anti-crime bill. The Senate has already passed a different version. On Milwaukee's north side this morning, at least five people, three of them children, were killed in a house fire. Two dozen people were in the house when the fire started. A gas leak is suspected in today's explosion that demolished a five-story apartment building outside Paris. Officials say at least four people were killed. On Wall Street, the Dow is ahead a fraction in light trading. It's 7:10.